Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School in Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Seeds of Destruction right after this. Well, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in the Bible detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide agenda. And the scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? It doesn't cost you anything. It's easy enough to do. Just give us a call. Tell us, hey, send me that CD pack. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time I said we'd take a look at this thing of nuclear power. I said Seeds of Destruction covers more than just the GMOs. It covers the false prophets and the liars, the deception that we see in Revelation 6, that white horse. It kills more people than the other three combined. This deception causes us to make wrong choices in life. We make wrong choices, and it kills us with AIDS. We make a wrong choice. We go down to Flo's Whorehouse. We get AIDS, herpes, and VD. It kills us. Our death certificate does not say bad choice. It says VD, gonorrhea. The gonorrhea might have been the vehicle, but it was the bad choice that we made. These bad choices come back and bite us in the butt is what happened. Now, over time, nuclear power has become a pariah. If you were to ask me, I would say, I think we made a mistake when we developed, when we came up with nuclear power. I think the world was better off without it. If we'd have never heard of nuclear power, if we'd have never developed a nuclear power plant or an atomic bomb, I think mankind would be better off without it. But you know, that's like Adam and Eve in the garden. They would have been better off if they'd had their eyes glazed over. They didn't have to have any knowledge. All the knowledge that they needed, they already possessed. But, you know, there was this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so they decided one day that they needed to have more knowledge of good and evil. So they went over and ate off the tree. Looking back on it in hindsight, I think the world would have been better off without it. But you know, once the genie's out of the jar, it's out of the jar. And the knowledge of good and evil is the genie out of the jar, and so now we've got it. So let's, as my old granny used to say, you know, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. So about the best we can do is make this bed as comfortable as possible. Same thing happens now with nuclear power. I think we were better off without it, but now that we've got it, you know, let's use it. Let's see if we can make this bed as comfortable as possible. Now, there are two sides to this nuclear issue. You got the environmentalists over here. They're screaming and ranting and raving and throwing temper tantrums all over the world, telling you we don't want nuclear power. I think it's one of the best options that's out there, just looking at it pragmatically. There's a lady by the name of Gwynth Cravens. It's kind of an odd name. It's spelled G-W-Y-N-E-T-H. Her last name is Cravens, C-R-A-V-E-N-S, and she wrote a book. That's Power to Save the World by Gwynth Cravens. And it's 464 pages, $27.95. And the ISBN number is 978-037. Excuse me, it's 0307. 266-569. This is a report. Now, remember, I told you I was going to give you this report from the Environment and Climate News. Now, I think if you were to call these people at Environment and Climate News at the Heartland Institute, tell them that you want March 2008 Environment and Climate News, I think they'd send you one. they want to get you on there as a subscriber, you tell them that you heard it on the Law Hour and that you'd like to get a sample copy so you can see whether their paper is worth subscribing to. Their phone number is 312-377-4000. It's 312-377-4000. It's called the Environment and Climate News. Well, anyway, this Cravens woman starts off, and she says, initially a skeptic about radiation and nuclear power, Gwyneth Cravens spent nearly a decade immersing herself in these subjects for her new book, Power to Save the World. So after visiting mines, experimental reactor laboratories, power plants, and remote waste sites, she changed her views about nuclear energy. You name it, she investigated it. She has thoroughly researched Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, the Nevada test site, the waste isolation pilot plant, and Yucca Mountain. And after all this effort, she refutes the claims against nuclear power with more facts than we have seen in any other book on this subject. Here are some useful examples. Radiation exposure. You know, once in a while, somebody comes up, the opponents of any side of any debate have to come up with, well, what's wrong with it? Not what's right with it. Not what's good about it. Not, well, how do we solve that problem with it? They're opposed to it, and so their job in the debate is to debunk it. It's to persuade people to forget about it. Now, it would seem like to me that if we were going to have an intelligent debate, we do this here on the farm, we do this here at the law school, we do this in business. A problem comes up, or somebody comes up with an idea, and then somebody will try to shoot it down. We call that being the devil's advocate. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. Somebody ought to shoot it down. Somebody ought to point out, well, what are you going to do with the spent fuel? What are you going to do with radiation contamination or radiation exposure? You know, there's all these problems that come up. Now, are there any solutions to these problems? And, you know, if you've got a problem here with radiation exposure and you've got no solution to it, well, then you got to forget it, don't you? You know, if we've got an airplane here on the runway and it won't fly, and every time we try it crashes and kills the pilot, at some point in time we got to say, well, after 10 dead pilots and 10 crashed airplanes, I guess this model, this type, this design doesn't work. You know, there comes a point in time when you got to give up on it. But just because an airplane crashes doesn't mean that we need to give up on the design. You know, there was an airplane called the Osprey, and the Marines wanted to develop that airplane. They got out there, and it was a hell of a job, you know, trying to figure out how to make this thing fly. They want a vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that flies straight and level straight ahead, you know, at 300 or 400 miles an hour. That was quite a little test. They finally did it. Well, they had killed a few people and crashed a few airplanes, but when it was all said and done, they got the job done. And sometimes perseverance is what you got to exhibit or display here in order to make this thing work. But in the nuclear power debate, we're not trying to solve problems. We are trying to generate as many problems as possible and persuade as many people as possible. This won't work, can't work, never has, doesn't now, never will. Forget it, put it out of your mind. We don't want it. So I got to ask myself, well, who is it that doesn't want nuclear power? Who doesn't want nuclear power? Well, Peabody Coal Company doesn't want nuclear power. And I can understand the logic behind that. If I was running the Peabody Coal Company, the last thing in the world I'd want is nuclear power. Exxon Mobil, they don't want nuclear power. Can't blame them. If I was Exxon Mobil, I would not want nuclear power either. What does nuclear power do for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife living in New Orleans, Bismarck, North Dakota, Seattle, Washington? What would it do for you? If you're paying $50 a month for electric power today, and we could deliver electric power to you for the next 5 years for $50 a month, would that be good for you? I think it would be, because I think that power in general is going to go up because of inflation. But in any event, would it be good for me if I could turn on my light switch, if I could heat my house, if I could do those things with nuclear power? And I think the answer to that is, yeah, I think it would be good for me. Not good for the oil company. Not good for my oil company stocks. Not good for my coal company stocks. Not good for my Union Pacific Railroad stocks. Let's take a look at it. Let's suppose we have a top-down command economy anyway, and the powers that be have already directed and dictated that we're going to have coal-fired power. 50% of our power comes from coal. And they've already dictated and directed that's where it's going to stay. But let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that they changed their minds for whatever reason. They said, okay, we're going to have nuclear power. We could have 100% nuclear power generating electricity in the United States over the next 30 to 50 years. Now, if we did that, it would eliminate greenhouse gases because it doesn't produce any. And isn't that the big bitch in life, greenhouse gas? Frankly, I gave you a report 2 or 3 weeks ago. The more carbon dioxide we put in the air, the better it is for all of us. That's the bottom line. Well, I suppose for the sake of our command top-down economy, we decide we don't want any more carbon dioxide in the air. We could accomplish that goal. Hands down. Now, if we were to put in nuclear power, we would also have cheaper power because nuclear power costs less to produce than does either gas-fired or coal-fired power plants. I don't know that the savings would be sent or passed on to you, the consumer. You know, it's like tomatoes. See, we used to produce tomatoes here in the United States. And then Congress came along and said, well, it ain't right for people to be working, you know, for $3 an hour. So they bumped the minimum wage up to $5, opened the borders to free trade, and destroyed the tomato industry in the United States because you can produce tomatoes in Hermosillo, Mexico for $2 an hour. Who in the hell is going to pay $5 an hour in Brownsville, Texas to produce tomatoes for Walmart when Walmart's going to buy those tomatoes from the producer in Hermosillo anyway? Well, same thing is true here with nuclear power. Who in the hell is going to buy coal-fired power and pay more money for it when you can have nuclear power and pay less? So Walmart goes to Hermosillo, buys the tomatoes, the $2 tomatoes instead of the $5 tomatoes. They don't lower the price to you. They charge the same $5 tomato price, but they make the difference themselves in profits. They can build more stores. Well, I don't blame them. I mean, that's business. Well, same thing is probably true with nuclear power. The guy that builds a nuclear power plant says, well, they were paying $50 a month to the coal-fired power plant. They might as well pay $50 a month to us, even though it costs us half as much to produce the power. All right, now, we've eliminated greenhouse gas. Well, wouldn't that eliminate all of this argument about global warming? My God, if you eliminate the argument over global warming, do you know that you're going to put all these environmental groups out of business? They will have succeeded in their mission. We don't need them anymore. What are they going to do? See, that's what happened with infantile paralysis, the March of Dimes. They went out and they created this March of Dimes and said, we've got to find a cure to polio. So they went out and they did. And it destroyed the March of Dimes. What do you need the March of Dimes for? What do you need polio research for? All the people engaged in polio research, all the people that were engaged in the March of Dimes all lost their jobs. They all learned a lesson from it. They said, we don't ever want to solve the problem. We want to keep the problem going on forever. We're always looking for a cause of cancer. We're always looking for a cure to cancer, but we're never going to find it. Because as soon as we find it, then our reason for being disappears. So we have to have controversy. Controversy is where the money's at. So if we were to develop nuclear power, boys and girls, that would be bad for all of the environmental groups. They don't want that. They want to argue about how bad nuclear power is, and they want to keep nuclear power out. So do the coal companies and oil companies. So the people that are arguing against nuclear power are all in the same bed. In fact, it's ARCO that supports the Sierra Club, that environmental group that's opposed to nuclear power. You know, as old Dan Rather says, just follow the money. But this is a decision that's being made that has in it the seeds of destruction. It's the wrong decision to make. Now, I don't know what the right decision is. Maybe nuclear power isn't the right decision, and wind power is where we want to go. Or maybe solar power, like the Germans are doing, that's where we want to go. Or let's dam up the Colorado River and flood the Grand Canyon, and hydropower is the way we want to go. But these people are opposed to all of the above. Every time you come up with a solution, they say, oh, no, no, not that, not that. Which leaves what? The status quo, coal and gas-fired power plants. No, they don't want a solution. Hell, if we wanted a solution, we would have done it already. What we want is controversy. We want to sit here and jawbone about it. Well, I'm an old-timey businessman, you know, and when I go into a meeting and we want to talk about something, when I come out of the meeting, I want to go to lunch. When I come out of the meeting, I want to go eat lunch, have a couple of martinis, chew the rag with the boys with the problem solved. I'm not coming in here just to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, you know. That's a politician. That's all they do is they get paid for talking. They don't get paid for doing anything. So I'm telling you, these politicians ain't worth the powder take to blow them to hell. I was talking about radiation exposure because Gwynth Cravens explains the radiation exposure problem. The annual public radiation exposure permitted by the Environmental Protection Agency for nuclear facilities is 15 millirems. Write that down, children. 15. Just put 15 on your paper. That's the maximum. So if you've got a nuclear power plant out there, it can only release 15 millirems into the environment. The average person in the United States is exposed to 200 millirems of radiation per year. All right. Without any nuclear power plants at all, every single year you are being exposed to 200, write that down, 200 millirems. So if you spent all of your time in Grand Central Station, let's suppose that you're a ticket agent and you work at Grand Central Station in New York City, you would get an annual radiation dose of nearly 600 millirems, write that down, 600. You see, boys and girls, if you live or you work in an environment where you have fluorescent lights, you are being exposed to radiation. Now, when was the last time you jumped up, screamed in terror, and ran out of your office because you're sitting under a fluorescent light? All of you secretaries out there, next time you go to work, look up, scream at the top of your lungs, gasp in horror like Judy Hartson, and run out of the room because you're being exposed to 600 millirems. And then send $50 to your local environmental group to support them so that you can abolish nuclear power, because nuclear power plants emit 15 millirems. Huh? Huh? I mean, come on. Isn't it time we woke up and smelled the coffee, for crying out loud? Now, it may be that nuclear power is a bad idea and we shouldn't have it, but being exposed to radiation ain't one of them. Can you follow that? Now, at Three Mile Island, the total calculated dose that Pennsylvanians received after the accident was far less than the measured dose that New Mexicans receive from nature every day. Pause right here. All right, all you people in Pennsylvania, Three Mile Island's just down the road. And Three Mile Island was a nuclear accident, and it released radiation into the atmosphere. And that was in 1979. And I have heard nothing but bitch about that from that day to this. If you live in New Mexico, you're exposed to more radiation every day from the sun than all the people in Pennsylvania, all combined, got from Three Mile Island. Now, so much for radiation exposure. Now, I'm not here advocating radiation exposure. From what I understand, it's bad for it. The 200 millirems that you get every day is bad for it. And the 600 that you get working in Grand Central Station is bad for it. And the 600 millirems that you get working at the insurance company under the fluorescent lights is bad for you. I don't know how many millirems you're getting off of your cell phone every day, but yeah, that's a problem. And I don't hear anybody saying, let's abolish cell phones and fluorescent lights and let's close down Grand Central Station now, do you? Or let's close up the state of New Mexico. Now, interestingly, in New Mexico, the cancer rate is much lower than the national average, although natural background radiation is much higher than the national average. And the same is true for Denver, Colorado. That's an anomaly. I don't know why that is. Now, people tell me, well, my God, they're exposing us to radiation and we're going to get cancer. BS. That's what that is. Just BS. So we take a look at the real science and we take a look at the real facts. And then remember where you heard this first. It's from the Heartland Institute. This is why I like their paper. Now, I kind of castigated them for two or three articles here in the series, but I wanted to come back and recover myself so that I don't cancel my subscription to the Environment and Climate News published by the Heartland Institute. And I'll get this number down here again, kids. It's 312-377-4000. That's 312-377-4000. Call them up and tell them you want the March 2008 edition called the Environment and Climate News. Now, they put out three or four other papers. They put one out on tax. They put one out on schools. It's an advocacy group. They're lobbyists. That's what they are. They're lobbyists. And so the lobbyists, they're working for their employers, and their employers in this case happens to be, and they're accused of being the lapdogs of the coal and oil interests, and they may be. Hell, I don't know where they get their money. What I like is a good solid report. Now, remember, these people are reporting on a book written by Gwyneth Cravens. And so what we do is we take the other side of this. And I would be the first one to say, I think nuclear power was a mistake. I think nuclear energy is a mistake. I don't think mankind can handle nuclear energy. I think in the end, Osama bin Laden's going to get one of those suitcase bombs, or he's going to build a bomb, and he's going to torch it off. That isn't going to be good for you. It isn't going to be good for me or anybody else. I don't think that human beings can handle that kind of power. That's what I've seen in history. That's what I've seen in modern times. But I'm just pointing out to you that we've already got it. It's here. We already ate off the tree. Our eyes have now been opened. So now what are we going to do with it? Well, the environmentalists say, let's go hide it under a bushel because we don't want anybody to know that we've been eating off the tree. Well, did you think that God didn't know that you had nuclear power down here on planet Earth? Did you think it somehow slipped by him? You got nuclear power, you might as well make the most of it. You know, you went out and got knocked up, so let's make the most of it, mother. That's the way life is. Now, residents of Finland receive an annual dose of radiation three times higher than a person would receive living in the same zone surrounding Chernobyl, now excluded from habitation. Got to put a big bracket around that one. Hey, all you Finns up there, if you live in Finland, Sweden, or Norway, you're living in what we call the northern latitudes, you people are getting more natural radiation from the sun than you could get today if you moved back to Chernobyl. Well, so much for Chernobyl. Now, that was a bad accident, and that's a lamentable blotch on nuclear power. Seems like the Russians built a poor power plant. And then they didn't operate this poorly designed power plant correctly, and it blew up. All right, so let's extrapolate that up. You know, I was a kid one time, and I bought a car. Then I took the car out, and I ran it into the back of a Mercer Fraser dump truck at about 35 miles an hour. Last time I looked at the speedometer, it was reading 35. When I looked up, kerblowy. And I got hurt real bad. I could have been killed. Could have. I didn't, but I could have. Now, did I learn anything from that? You bet. You bet. I learned from that accident. I think I was 16 years old. And when I had that wreck, I thought I was a pretty good driver at age 16. You know, my feet could manage the pedals, and they could reach the pedals. I could steer it down the street pretty good. And you know, I thought, you know, at age 16, I thought I had pretty good control over it. As it turned out, I didn't. I haven't run into the back of any dump trucks after that one. As I pointed out, I learned from that accident. But I didn't quit driving just because I ran into the back of a dump truck. And I would contend that just because a power plant melted down is no reason to give up on nuclear power. Can we learn anything from it? Now, my daddy one time used to ask me this question. He said, now, did you learn anything from that, son? And I'd say, yes, sir. He said, well, no more needs to be said. Now, one time, I got lippy with my old dad, and he said, did you learn anything from that boy? He used to call me boy. Did you learn anything from that boy? And I said, no. My dad jumped up off the couch. He said, have I raised a fool? Whipped off his belt, grabbed me, threw me against the wall, bounced me off the wall, beat the living hell out of me. And he said, did you learn anything from that boy? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I learned. Okay. Now, you have to be a fool to fail to learn. Did you learn anything from Three Mile Island? Did you learn anything from Chernobyl? Did we learn anything from Hiroshima? I mean, these environmentalists out here evidently believe that the rest of the people in the world are a bunch of damn fools and can't learn. So my opinion is, well, if the people at Chernobyl learned from that mistake, and the people at Three Mile Island learned from that mistake, and the Atomic Energy Commission noted it down, wrote it up in the books, and sends it off to General Electric and Westinghouse, and says, okay, boys, next time you design a power plant, let's learn the lessons from Chernobyl and Three Mile Island so that that don't happen again. And I want to point out, nobody's ever been killed in one of these nuclear accidents, at least not here in the United States. Now, there was a few killed over there in Russia, over in Ukraine, I guess. And there will probably be some more people die from cancer over there as a result of that. But boys and girls, people have been dying from accidents, you know, for thousands of years. And people died for a long time after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, we didn't evidently learn from that because we didn't abolish the nuclear weapons. It would seem like to me that abolishing nuclear weapons would make more sense than abolishing nuclear power plants. Now, you haven't abolished your nuclear weapons yet. So why should you abolish your nuclear power plants? Because out of this, the only good thing that came out of this nuclear program to start with was the potential for the nuclear energy. Running around dropping bombs on people and killing them doesn't do anything for you and I. Generating electricity might. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on subjects such as law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order one, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we were talking about the seeds of destruction. Now, we started taking a look at genetically modified organisms from the money changer. That's the March 2008 money changer. It's my contention that the seeds of destruction go further than GMOs. It goes to Revelation 6 and the white horse and deception. And it goes to nuclear power, wind generation, environmental groups and organizations, or the environmental movement. We are bombarded with the seeds of destruction through false prophets. And I'm not talking about long-haired old guys running around telling you to flee from the wrath to come. I'm talking about Katie Couric and Brian Williams, Charlie Gibson, USA Today, George Bush, Nancy Pelosi. I mean, these people come out and lie to us constantly, and they give us bad information. And then we act on the bad information, and it kills us. Well, it sure as hell don't benefit us. Now, it might not kill you today. But an illustration of that, you know, we've taught a whole generation, maybe two generations by now, about sexual perversion in our public schools under the guise of sex education in public school. And we call it an alternative lifestyle called sodomy and whoredom. Now, I can't tell you how many people that's killed, but it's killed a bunch already. It's going to kill a bunch more. And that's lying deception. And this lying deception kills more people, has killed, is killing, and will kill more people than the other three horses of Revelation 6 combined. And we're on the threshold now of the extermination of 90% of all of humanity. Now, we're right on the cutting edge of it. And that's the objective. That's where we're headed. And we've been headed there since 1939. And in the 1930s, we called that eugenics. In 1946, we changed the name to genetics. Now we call it the New World Order. We have these buzz names, and the people behind it are the Committee of 300 and George Bush, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid, and Dianne Feinstein, and John McCain, and Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama, and all these politicians out here part and parcel with them. They got an agenda. They're headed someplace. They got a mission. They got a goal, and they're carrying it out. And so far, it is working perfectly, flawlessly. Everything's great. Their time schedule's a little off. I remember back in 1983, they had it in their minds that they'd have it all accomplished by the year 2000. It's 2008. So far, they're 8 years behind. Looks like it's going to take them another 7, 8, 9, 10 years to do it. By the year 2020, they're going to have it done. And by 2050, they expect to have the world's population stabilized at about 500 million people. That's about a half a billion. Some big names are behind it. Zygmunt Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, Ted Turner, Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip. I mean, these are big names, George Bush. And will they accomplish their goal? Well, Jesus made an observation. He said, if these people achieve their goal, there will no flesh be saved alive on planet Earth. That's bad news for you and me. And I mentioned this last time and the time before. I said, you know, now that they've got the ball rolling, you've already unleashed AIDS. You're already spraying us with contrails. You've already set in motion the disease epidemics of the future. You've got the educational system in your control, and now you're about to unleash thermonuclear war. Do you people, honest to God, believe that when you get the population down to 500 million that you'll be able to stop all of these forces? Even God himself said they wouldn't. He said, unless I step in and cut this time short, there'll no flesh be left alive. Fortunately for all of us, he says, I'm going to cut it off. I'm going to save you fools from yourselves. But I'm not going to do it before the fact. I'm going to do it after the fact. So in Isaiah 6, verse 13, he says, I'm going to save a tithe of you alive. That's 10%. That fits right in with Global 2000. These sociopathic maniacs say they're going to eliminate 90% of us, and God says, I'm going to save 10% of you alive. Both sides are in absolute agreement. 10% is the final number. All right, now what's that do for you and me? Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Because we're either going to be in the 90% that are dead or the 10% are left alive. That's the choice that you and I have. So as I'm watching world events go by and I read my environment and climate news, this woman goes on a step further. Remember, this is a book now by Quint Cravens. This is a valuable book. I think it's pretty good. It's $27.95, 464 pages. I can give you the ISBN number. I don't have any more information on it. It's 978-0307-266569. If you can get that number down, I'll give it to you one more time. It's ISBN. That's the number that's in the face of all books. ISBN. 978-0307-266569. It's called Power to Save the World. Now, this woman is advocating nuclear power. I think she's got a good point. Probably isn't going to come to pass, but she's got a good point. Now, I want to make this observation. In France, they're generating 60% of their power, I believe it's 60% from nuclear power. And in Japan, I think it's right at 40%. They've got the same problems over there generating power that we've got here in the United States. Now, how do the French and the Japanese dispose of their nuclear waste? Have you heard of those people over there jumping up and down, throwing a temper tantrum in an apoplectic rage, trying to figure out what to do with the nuclear waste? Hell, they don't even have a Yucca Mountain. Now, I mentioned to you here a couple weeks ago, I said the solution to the nuclear waste is to recycle it. Hell, none of these guys are telling you to recycle it. The solution is you take it and recycle it. You know, they tell you to recycle your aluminum cans. How come they don't tell you to recycle the nuclear waste and turn it into nuclear energy again and then reuse it over and over and over again? Did you know they could even do that? Yeah, they can, but they don't tell you about that, and I wonder why. I pointed it out. I said, the objective here is controversy. It's not solutions. So the oil companies and the coal companies and the nuclear people and the environmentalists, nobody is telling you, well, this has solved the problem. And that's because we don't want to solve the problem. We want to continue with the status quo. But we want to talk a lot about it and make you people out there think that we're really busy doing something. So you'll vote for us. But we're not going to change anything. I got to laugh, you know, and I hear these fools talking about, I'm the agent of change. Barack Obama, the agent of change, working for the Committee of 300? Huh? Come on. Come on. Wake up. Hillary Clinton, the agent of change. John McCain, the agent of change. You get more of the same, and that's what is programmed into the equation. That's what we've worked for to build up, and that's what we're going to continue on with. Now, after visiting mines and experimental reactor laboratories, power plants, remote waste sites, the author, Gwen Cravens, changed her view about nuclear energy. As of 2006, nuclear-powered submarines and ships had safely traveled a total of 134 million miles and registered 5,700 naval reactor years of safe operation with a total of 254 reactors. Now, the United States Navy has 254 reactors. They've been operating them now for 50 years. I think they started in 51, didn't they? 52, 3, 4, maybe it was about 53 or 4, something like that. They started off with a nuclear submarine called the Nautilus, if I remember right. And a guy by the name of Hyman Rickover, I think, was called the father of nuclear energy or the father of the nuclear submarine force. And so far, they've done a pretty good job. Now, if they can do it on these portable platforms called nuclear submarines, can we do that here on land in a fixed base operation? So far, we've had a pretty good record. So far. I want to say what may explain these facts is the biological theory of hormesis. Organisms are made more resilient by low-level exposure to a substance that is toxic in larger doses. Cravens covers this topic, but is attempting to present both sides of the issue. She does not cover the wide literature base of studies on animals and humans that confirm the beneficial effects of low-level radiation. Edward Celebrezzi of the University of Massachusetts at Amherst has published extensively in this field and is a good source for additional information. In spite of this science, governments continue to use the linear no-threshold model, which says any radiation dose, no matter how small, is harmful. Misuse of this model has produced spending in excess of $1 trillion in the United States alone for negligible health benefits, just for government environmental cleanup programs, while truly significant measures that would and could protect the public health remain unfunded. And I'll point this out for a second here. Here's your government. They come along and they say, look, we've got to come up with standards for nuclear power plants. And so the standard is zero emissions. Any radiation that you receive is bad for you. This jacks up the cost and the time, effort, and energy that it takes to build one of these nuclear power plants. I think it takes 12 years from start to finish to get one off the drawing boards and up and running. 12 years. And they've spent tons and tons of money trying to come up with this mythical zero radiation exposure. I started off and I said, hell, you're already getting more radiation in Grand Central Station in New York. I mean, just your everyday living here in America. 200 millirems. A day, 200, 600 if you're working in Grand Central Station, 600 if you're working in an office under fluorescent lights. Now listen, this background radiation is not harmful to you. You have been told that it was harmful to you. You believe that it's harmful. And you'll probably go to your grave with that belief. But that's a part of the seeds of deception. It's a lying deception. That's what the bottom line is. There's any science that backs that up. Now I know some guy comes along and he says, well, before the flood, you know, people were living 900 years in a perfect environment without radiation. Now, the guy that makes that claim, he does not know that, and I don't know that, and that's his theory, and he's certainly welcome to it and entitled to it, and hell, it may even be true. But boys and girls, this isn't a perfect world, and that's not where we're living, and it isn't before the flood, it's after the flood, and now we're being subjected to radiation bombardments because the atmosphere has changed, and we're not living 900 years, we're living 75. Now, that's reality. So you can count on about 25,550 days of life under the terms of the old covenant. Moses brought the deal down off the mountain. That's what we were offered. That's what your great-great-granddaddy 40 generations ago accepted, and that's what you got today. Nothing more, nothing less. I hear these crackpots all the time telling us, well, you should live to be 120, 30, or 40 years old. Hell, even Jack LaLanne, he ain't dead yet, but Jack LaLanne, you think he's going to live to be 140 years old? I'm watching. I saw him on TV the other day. That old fart was so old. He was old when I was a kid. Jack LaLanne, he's a health nut. Physical fitness guy. He was on TV the other day. He's about 95 years old. I don't deny that physical fitness and exercise and good diet is good for you, as evidenced by Jack LaLanne. I just want to see the guy live to be 140, and then that'll prove it. He's a longevity guy. Anyway, getting back here to what is truly within the realm of possibility. The spending of all this money and taking all this time, effort, and energy to create a perfect nuclear power plant which doesn't have any radiation leakage to it is just nonsense. But let's suppose, for the sake of our argument, that that's the standard that we're going to follow. Okay, we'll keep on following it. Because even with all the money that's wasted building nuclear power plants, they're still cheaper and produce energy cheaper than coal fire, and they don't have any emissions. And just those two bottom line reasons right there is every reason in the world that we should have nuclear power and go forward with the program. Now some guy comes up and says, what are you going to do with all the spent fuel? Okay, here it is. It's on page 10, spent fuel. Storing spent nuclear fuel poses no problem. The Yucca Mountain site in Nevada was supposed to open in 1998, but delays have continued to plague the project. And Cravens mentions an alternative that we had not heard. It's called the sub-seabed operation. Now, this is assuming that you want to dispose of it. I can't see any reason for disposing of it. Excuse me, boys and girls, but if after you have used this nuclear energy to generate electricity and it's now spent, and you can take it and recycle it, and then you can use it again, wouldn't that make more sense? Now, I reported that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but I just thought I'd point that out to you again. If you've got an aluminum can and you already opened it and you already drank the contents, we've come to the conclusion in this country that we should recycle it, throw it into the recycling bin, remeld it, and turn it into a new can, fill it up again, and then just keep recycling it over and over and over again. We came to that conclusion. I think that's a pretty logical idea. I think that makes all the sense in the world. Recycle those aluminum cans. It just occurred to me that recycling the spent nuclear fuel makes more sense than disposing of it at Yucca Mountain or in the sub-seabed operation. But if you people are just hell-bent on, we've got to dispose of it, okay, we can do that too. And Cravens points out that in the ocean, there is a vast red clay formation that has maintained great stability and uniformity over millions of years, far longer than the half-lives of almost all the radionucleosides in nuclear waste. The clay has low permeability and the consistency of peanut butter. A pointed steel canister containing high-level nuclear waste dropped to the ocean floor will sink through this muck to a depth of 30 meters. The continuous rain of sediments from above will bury it deeper. Many thousands of square miles of seabed like this exist. Under many miles of water, hundreds of miles from shore, such sites, though costing several orders of magnitude less than Yucca Mountain, have long been overlooked as potential storage sites for spent nuclear fuel. Okay, got that? Now, if you're just hell-bent for disposing of it. Now, I noticed that when the candidates went out to Nevada, and I don't know why you people in Nevada are throwing such a hissy fit over that Yucca Mountain thing out there, but you've been told that if you put this nuclear spent fuel in that mountain, all of you people in Nevada are going to die a horrible, terrible death from radiation poisoning. And I'm sure that all you people out there believe it. It's horse pucky. But okay, let's suppose that that's the case. Let's close down Yucca Mountain and let's bury it out in the ocean. If you don't want to bury it in the ocean, then let's just keep recycling. How many times could you recycle an aluminum can? I don't know, but more than once, 2, 5, or 9, or 12, or 15 times. There are other nations on planet Earth that are generating nuclear power, and they're building more nuclear power plants every day. Now, the reason that we're not building nuclear power plants in the United States is because we want to burn coal. And I'm sitting here saying, I really don't care whether you burn coal, burn gas, have nuclear fired, wind generation, hydropower, or solar power. I really don't care. I just want to flip on my switch. And I'd like to see somebody come up to a conclusion one of these days and quit the damn arguing and bickering and fighting over nonsense. There's enough capacity if we want in this country, if we want. We could generate all of our electricity with hydropower. There's that much water in the United States of America. We don't, we won't, we haven't, and we're not going to, but we could. I reported that to you. And I contend that that is another seed of deception. We could, if we wanted to, we could generate all of our electricity in this country from wind power. There's that much wind in the United States of America. Hell, there's that much wind in Washington, D.C., for crying out loud. We could do it with solar power. It is true that it's going to cost us a little more for solar power and wind power because coal fire and gas fired is cheaper. But nuclear power is even cheaper than that. That's why I say. And nuclear power, everybody is in agreement on. See, they'll sit there and say, well, we don't think we can produce wind power and solar power soon enough to solve all of our energy needs. But you can do it with nuclear power plants, and you can do it over the next 30 years. Every time you go to build a power plant, tell them no more coal, build nuclear. Pretty soon, the coal-fired power plants in 30 years will wear out, and they'll close them down. And it'll be replaced with a nuclear power plant. See how simple that is? And then you can have safe, clean, environmental-friendly nuclear electricity. That's the bottom line. Remember now, this is called the Heartland Institute. That's the outfit that puts this out. And the paper that you want is called Environment and Climate News. Environment and Climate News. And their telephone number, again, is 312-377-4000. That's 312-377-4000, the Heartland Institute. And they're up in Illinois, is where it is, Chicago, Illinois. I think you'll enjoy the paper. It's a good one. All right, that was one. Then I told you about the Committee of 300. That's another neat little book over here, put out by a guy named John Coleman. He's an MI6 spook with British intelligence. It's called the Committee of 300. You can get it from the Joseph Publishing Company, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. That's Joseph Publishing Company, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. That'll help destroy a couple more seeds of deception. Hey, we're about out of time. I got to give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Air time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.